Welcome to episode 37 of the Improvised Music Agenda podcast. Who you hear back there is our guest this week, guitar player Moss Fried. Let's listen. Thanks for joining again, and if you're a first-time listener, welcome. This is the Improvised Music Agenda podcast, presented and hosted by myself, Hugh V. Williams. I am a bass player and composer, originally, well, still am. And yeah, so this is where I chat to fellow musicians about all sorts of stuff. So, we're coming to you from Betwixtmas 2019, so that week between Christmas and New Year. Sorry, I've not been on the case with putting out episodes recently because I've had a pretty busy month. I was in Berlin earlier this month, which was quite fun. I was there for a concert. Another little bit. And yeah, we just finished touring Mike D'Souza's trio album release. And yeah, all sorts of stuff. So I found a time now between Christmas and New Year to put this podcast out. And yeah, hopefully I should be able to put some more out in the new year. I've still got a few in the can. So, anyway, but more about today. This is with Moss Fried. So, I'm sure some of you will know his name. He is a guitar player, composer, and recently he's been doing a project called Union Division, which really caught my interest. So, it's a sort of conducted improvisation between the whole band. So there's no leader, it's all democratic, large ensemble improvising. So yeah, that's all very exciting. This episode was recorded during the London Jazz Festival in front of a live audience. And yeah, big thanks to the Vortex for having us there. So this is the second episode from the live podcast series. And a big shout out to Callum Allbrow for recording it as well. And yeah, so this is all cool, and there's another two episodes to come from the live ones, and I've got another one in the can, which is super exciting. I'm gonna put that out for episode 40 if it lines up all right. So yeah, do please check in and carry on listening to the podcast. If you want to help support the podcast, you can do so via Patreon. So the Patreon thing, so you can do a monthly donation or you could do a one-off donation. So it all really helps. And yeah, so there's going to be some video content on that soon. So if you want to see that, do please sign up. So the video content will be of my interview with Mark Holub and also Ruth Goller. So do check that out. And yeah, so that's cool. Those videos, they were filmed by Pedro Velasco of Freeze Productions. So if you want to see those, do sign up to the Patreon and give in a few quid. Anyway, less of all this intro business. Let's have a listen to the conversation I had with Moss Fried. Enjoy. So let's welcome our guest, our guest this week, I should say, Moss Fried.
Thank you.
Cool. Thanks for coming down, Moss.
Oh, yeah. Pleasure. Ledge. Thanks for having me.
Cool. So let's begin at the beginning. So you grew up in Manchester.
Correct.
I'm right. Yeah. Cool. And then, all right. So how did you get into music? Was it quite an early age you started?
Just generally.
Yeah.
I always wanted to do music. Yeah. Since as long as I can remember. I definitely remember aged about five saying, I want to be a guitar player. And that was it.
Cool. And do you remember what drew you to the guitar?
Probably rock and roll. I was very into Elvis at that time.
Yeah. Sick.
Some family friend gave me some like 50s and 60s rock and roll cassettes when I was probably about five. And I just listened to them on loop, you know. And then my parents had this record player, and I had my one vinyl was his Elvis vinyl, and that was it. Yeah, I was getting into rock and roll, guitar music, and then went from there all downhill.
Brilliant. Cool. All right. So, yeah, so that's quite early to start playing as well. That's brilliant. So,
well, it wasn't really... Yeah, I played a bit then.
Okay.
But I didn't really start playing for a few years. I used to... Well, mainly it was like tennis rackets, miming with a tennis racket.
And
We've all been there.
So, all right. So, I guess, like, so the whole rock music thing, that what how it goes with the guitar. So, I guess you go through that kind of teenage phase, like a lot of rock music, and
Yeah, I'm still in it.
Good.
Yeah.
Cool. So, I mean, like, what were the first bands that you were really checking out in that?
Well, you know, I grew up. I sort of. You know, when I was 11, 12, 13, that was the early 90s. So we're talking like a lot of Nirvana, Rage Against the Machine, Radiohead, like Pablo Honey, The Bends. These were the kind of big albums shaping my outlook on things at that time.
Great, yeah. And then, so I guess were you like learning all these on the guitar as well? And
Yeah, and the rest. Great. I sort of started at the same time kind of learning, you know, rock guitar, so to speak. And I was having classical lessons at the same time. So, and the two were slightly parallel. They didn't overlap that much. And then they kind of started to overlap more and more a few years later. But so I kind of started playing both like classical and non-classical at the same
time. Okay. Oh, brilliant. That's interesting. Yeah. So did you consider them at that time like two different instruments almost? But
not quite too different. Yeah, sort of. Okay. I guess one definitely involved reading music and the other one definitely didn't.
Right.
So that was one part of it. So yeah, one was like based on your ears, you listen to a tape or the radio, you try and work something out, or you learn a riff from your mates, or like my brother played, so he taught me some stuff. And the other one was, yeah, it was a bit more formal. You sat down, you learn a piece of music, but yeah, it didn't sort of, they weren't separate for that long.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, so the whole kind of jazz improvised music thing, so did that come in a bit later then?
Quite a bit later, yeah. I mean,
okay.
So one of my best friends from school is here in the audience, and he will remember that we had a piano teacher at school. And I think he was one of my first people to kind of introduce jazz. And he actually used to sort of, well, you wouldn't be able to do this anymore, but he used to take us to gigs sometimes and like see his mates play, and we'd go and see him play. And I just, yeah, that was probably when I was, you know, late teens or 16, 17, that kind of age. Really exposed to jazz, at least live. I'd heard some stuff before and I was quite into it, but it was that experience of seeing it live. I was like, what the hell are you guys doing? You know, how are you all coordinating? What is this thing? You know,
brilliant.
So that was when it kind of, the spark was ignited.
Great. So that was around Manchester. You were going to see all those gigs and then...
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you remember the people you'd go and see play or...
Oh, now you're asking.
Yeah.
No. Eddie Palmieri, yeah. Well, that was more on the kind of Afro-Cuban / jazz side.
Oh, right.
I definitely remember that. That was a big one, wasn't it? Because Ed, the piano teacher, he had some spare tickets, and I don't think he could make it. I can't remember. Anyway, he said us, like, do you want these tickets? And it was Band on the Wall? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, cool.
And that was, yeah, that sparked an interest in kind of Latin music as well. But I can't remember any of the other names. They were kind of local guys.
Right,
I just, you know, I was young. I wasn't paying attention to that.
Cool.
I was just listening to the music.
And then, yeah, so, but yeah, Manchester though, but it seems like pretty vibrant scene there. Because I guess, yeah, because like Band of the Wall, that's one of the main venues to see, or I guess like bigger acts.
Yeah. It's, and it's been going a hell of a long time, but around, I can't remember exactly when, but there was quite a long hiatus when it was kind of out of action.
Right, okay.
There were a couple of smaller places, and there's always Matt and Fred's has been around as long as I can remember jazz gigs, although I don't know exactly when it started, but there've always been three or four places although I think it might have, it might not be quite so
right, yeah,
easy now.
But yeah,
from what I hear.
But I was thinking with Band on the Wall though, because I remember seeing, like, cause I think I played there once years ago, but didn't it start as like a venue where like there was a literally an accordion player on a stage really high that was on the wall?
Oh.
I think I remember seeing some picture. I don't know if you know any history of that.
That's news to me. No, I don't know.
It's just really funny picture. Just this guy, it looks like he's strapped to the wall, like halfway up the room, you know, like kind of just with an accordion. Sounds like a kind of torture kind of thing, isn't it?
Yeah, well, like, yeah.
Have this accordion on the wall.
What, the accordion generally, or?
Yeah, you know, well, yeah.
Being strapped halfway at the wall. No, I love the accordion.
Yeah. Oh, great. So did you go on to study music afterwards then?
Yeah, so I went to Edinburgh to do a degree in music.
All right, cool.
And then university.
Were you active playing during that time?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's when I started playing a lot, and I was doing mainly funk stuff, which is kind of how I came to jazz playing, really.
Right, okay.
Was sitting on one chord, was just getting a bit boring, and I still love listening to that stuff, but I was always pushing that band, like, oh, let's try this tune, you know, and they're like, oh, it's got too many chords in it, yeah, you know. And let's try this one, and I, there was something that was kind of there that I wanted to explore that I wasn't really able to explore with that band, which is why I started having lessons with this guy Kevin McKenzie. I don't know if you've come across him.
All right, what does he play? Is he?
He's a guitarist.
Guitar player.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think, as far as I'm aware, still in Edinburgh. Fantastic guitar player, and I used to see him a lot when I was studying up there, and had some lessons with him. And started learning the kind of rudimentary stuff, which felt weird having done a degree. I was like, oh, I've learned all this stuff about harmony and counterpoint, and I, you know, fairly all right at the instrument now. And then it was like, okay, really can't play this stuff.
Right, you know, okay.
It's
yeah.
Like back to the beginning again.
Amazing. So you stuck around Edinburgh after your degree for a bit?
For a year afterwards. Still playing a bit and working in Holland and Barrett.
Nice.
Yeah,
cool.
Obviously. Surprisingly good job. I enjoyed that. And then I went to Berklee in Boston
for a year. Yeah, because I was going to ask about that. So the research was doing, yeah, so you were there. So was that kind of studying guitar there? And
yeah, guitar and composition from a kind of jazz perspective.
Oh, great. Yeah. Oh, man, that must have been amazing.
Yeah, it was amazing. Yeah. A lot of people ask me, you know, there's a sort of perception of Berklee in this country, at least, that I can tell. People are always like, oh, how did you like it? How was it? You know, as in they think it's going to be crap. But for me at that time, it was perfect. And I don't think it would be perfect for everyone all the time,
sure,
you know.
Yeah.
But for me at that stage, it was really great. You know, I learned a hell of a lot. They threw all sorts at me, way more than I could keep up with.
Oh, great.
So I just kind of amassed stacks and stacks of things. I thought, well, this is the rest of my life sorted, you know.
Killer, yeah.
And just practiced loads and wrote loads. And it was really full on for a year. And I improved a lot in a short space of time. So it did the job for me.
Mega. So who is your guitar tutor there? Is it?
Well, I had a few. The one that sticks really with me, well, there's two. There's a woman called Cheryl Bailey, who's fantastic. She's quite jazz. She's quite straight ahead.
Yeah, I think I've heard the name before, yeah.
But she taught me a lot about that kind of approach. And then I had a guy called John Damien, who I think was Bill Frisell's teacher ages ago. And his approach was like quite different. It was kind of related to the guitar, but it wasn't really guitar specific.
Okay.
It was a lot about opening things up, trying to think about voicings and different ways to do triads. And it was a lot about composing with improvising.
Okay.
When you're improvising, to be thinking of it in a compositional way, when you're composing, to think about it in an improvisational way. And, you know, he's written books called what's the book called? I can't remember which way around it is. It's like Composing for Improvisers or Improvising for Composers, or
okay, yeah,
one of those things. So he was really inspirational, and changed the way I played quite a lot.
Brilliant, yeah. Because I guess, yeah, because the perception I've had of Berkeley, I guess it's like really varied there, isn't it? Like, because I guess you get the more like improviser people, and then maybe the more jazz thing, and then I guess there's the pop thing there as well, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of everything
between, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, out of 4,000 students when I were there, 1,000 of them were guitar players.
Wow.
Which is kind of inconceivable when you think of like British colleges. You think 1,000 guitar players in one place. I mean, that's just a nightmare, right?
That's mad.
The worst thing I can imagine.
Yeah, imagine how loud that would get.
Yeah. And I'd say like a good proportion of those were kind of metalheads and heavy rock players and shredders. But then if you've got 1,000 guitar players, you're going to have everything, right? I mean, that's just on the guitar. So it's a place where you can go and kind of do anything. I mean, there wasn't a great deal of free improv that I could see. But kind of most other things.
Yeah, yeah.
Within the non-classical pseudo-jazz spectrum.
Cool.
Were catered for.
Oh, great. And then, so after you finished that, so did you move back to Manchester? All right, okay. Oh,
yeah. Well done. Yeah, yeah. So, I went back to Manchester and basically just worked there for a few years. And that was when I started putting my first bands together. And
so what's that first band? That was Moss Project,
is
it? Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So who's in that originally? So that was Marek.
So the original lineup
was
all Manchester people. Trying to think now. Do you want to know who was in the original?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So it had a few lineups, but Kenji Fenton played saxophone.
All right,
who
okay.
I think now seems to do a lot of kind of pop tours and plays with like, to play with Amy Winehouse and the like horn section stuff. Ed Barnwell, the piano teacher, who was at school, was in that band. Rob Turner, who now plays with Go Go Penguin.
All right, yeah, yeah.
I also had a guy called Mikey Wilson playing drums. Joe Jones was playing violin. Gavin Barris was playing bass.
Cool.
That was the kind of first lineup that we gigged quite a lot. And then it morphed. Joe left. I got Alice Zawadzki in. That was back in Manchester.
All right. So I guess she was still at the Royal Northern at that point.
Or maybe just out of it.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And that opened up a whole thing with that band, and that we now had this incredible voice as well. You know, I was looking for a violin player, and then there was Alice, who was not only a great violin player, but as you know, I'm sure, fantastic vocalist. So then it started changing the way I was writing for that. And it changed, and then I moved down here, and it sort of maintained that lineup for a bit, and then it condensed down to four of us, and it was me, Alice, and Ruth Goller, and Marek. And they'd been doing some stuff, and there were various periods where other people played. Sam Andre played for a bit.
Okay, yeah.
I'm trying to think, there's probably a few other people I'm forgetting, but it had, you know, had a few people come in and out of it. But it ended up as that quartet in London that we then did for a few years like that.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, so what brought you to London originally? Well, was it kind of to be somewhere busier?
Yeah, more, I guess I was always trying to, I wanted to find more people who were doing things more like I was doing,
Sure, man, same thing here. It's
trying to think of a way to say this, but yeah, and in Manchester there are a few people, but then kind of a few people all left at once.
Right, okay, yeah.
And I just sort of was seeing all this stuff happening down here, and there was an opportunity. My friend had a room, and it was just like, just all kind of worked out. I thought, oh, I'll just go for it.
Cool.
See what happens. And that was just over 10 years ago, I just realised.
Oh, right, brilliant. Yeah, yeah, no, because I was thinking the same thing, because, after college, remember thinking, I don't know, I could like stay in Cardiff or move, but it's like the opportunities here are far greater, which is in one sense like really cool, but unfortunate another way that you have to move here. in a way, you know, it's like, yeah, no, because I've noticed with this, because like, actually thinking about Manchester, I was there, like the other week, just like knocking about, like, the day off, and like got in touch with some local guys for a play, and it's like, fuck, this is like really cool here. It's like, you know, it's like a vibe, but
But yeah, then, there's always been a load of great players there.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, but it's funny how there's like so many little scenes and pockets of,
yeah, totally.
Yeah, yeah. So you were up to that band here first, so the Moss Project, and then that was one of the first projects you were getting together here. And then, cool. Like, what was sort of the stuff were you up to, kind of just doing the whole jazz thing?
I can't remember now. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it was basically, I was trying to hustle gigs for that band mainly, and I was trying to meet people and find out who was who, going to see as much as I could, and like trying to get some work, and you know, I got some teaching work, and I was also like met my current wife at that stage. So there was a lot of like exciting things happening at that time when I moved down.
Cool. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Brilliant. And then so the next thing that came up, so like Let's Spin. So I think, am I right in thinking that's like a co-led thing, or is that?
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. It's a big part of what that band is.
Great. So was that kind of an evolution of the previous band for you in a way?
Well, I guess it was a kind of really happy accident. I booked a tour for Moss Project, and then some people ended up not being able to make it. I think two people couldn't make it. Suddenly,
oh wow!
Out of the four, so I was like, okay, well, do I sack off the tour, or no? I just put a new band together,
great,
and did the tour. So Ruth could do it still, and she suggested we got this guy Chris Williams in, who I didn't really know about. He had done one thing with Moss Project. Actually, I did know he was playing at that stage.
All right.
And then we're thinking about who to play drums in it, and I thought of my friend Finn, who played drums a lot for Moss Project back in Manchester. Yeah.
So
he forgot to mention that.
All right, but he's in Berlin now.
He's in Berlin, and he was then as well.
All right, wow.
But I just thought for this thing, he would be kind of perfect for it. So, and he was free. So he came over, the four of us met in Liverpool, and we had maybe 2 or 3 hours to play, and then we started this tour.
Great. That's the way to do it, man. Yeah, yeah.
And it was just amazing. It was the best. It was one of the best experiences ever. We just came together. The whole deal was everyone brings two tunes.
Okay.
So it's a new band. Everyone brings two tunes. We're all going to play everyone else's music. So from the very first meeting, it was this egalitarian thing. And it's been like that ever since.
Brilliant.
And that it was just so easy. We all got together and we just played, and it was like, oh, this is easy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and wonderful and fun.
Yeah.
And we did that tour, and it was great. And we recorded an album a few weeks later, and that was the first album.
Great.
And it was all very quick and very easy.
Brilliant. And what did that first one come out? Was it 2014?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, I was trying to remember.
Yeah. Cool.
Earlier, I think it is 2014.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And then was it soon after you did the second record?
Yeah, a year or maybe the following year we recorded it. The following year it came out.
Cool.
I'm not very good with remembering dates.
All right. Cool, yeah. But no, I was listening to that on the way here and just thinking, I was thinking of the first tune. It's a Charlie Hayden reference, is it?
I like want to sound like a rainforest.
Yeah, is that one of yours? Or?
That's Ruth's.
Is it Ruth's? Yeah, I was just thinking like, but yeah, just hearing some of the music has kind of made me think like, oh yeah, it's kind of put the new spin on the, I don't know, but I can hear some of that Paul Motion, Charlie Hayden thing.
Ruth's, certainly at that time was really inspired by the Paul Motion trio with Frizzell and Lovano and also with Charlie Hayden.
Yeah.
I think she was quite big at listening a lot to that stuff when she wrote those tunes. Yeah.
But it's a great record though.
Thanks.
Like, super into it. Yeah. But was that with Alex Kilpatrick? He did that, wasn't it? Yeah.
So he ended up mixing it.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah. The first record, he mastered it.
Okay.
And then the next one, we wanted him to master it again, and we were having some problems with mixing, and we just thought, oh, he's good. Like, let's ask him to mix it. And anyway, he just did his magic.
Cool.
Have you worked with Alex?
Yeah, so funny, I went to college with Alex.
Right.
So, yeah, so we used to hang out loads then. Yeah. But, yeah,
so he just took these kind of, you know, these, just this recording and just made it into something really, you know, amazing. That's what I think.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
So I think he's a bit of a magician.
Definitely, yeah. He's a badass behind the, I don't know, the controls? I don't know. I was going to say behind
something
the decks.
Like that.
But
yeah.
Cool. So, so recently you've been doing Union Division. So you've been playing upstairs. So that's a month. Is that monthly residency?
Well, it was kind of roughly monthly.
All right. Okay.
1 month or 2 months between for since March. May.
All right. Okay. So is that, that's a part of your, well, PhD, which another thing I was going to mention.
Yeah. So it's definitely a big part of my PhD research. But the idea was always to work with that band, with that music as research, but so that it would also have a life of its own. So the aim was always to also release records and do gigs.
Yeah.
And, you know, the PhD is due to finish soon, but the band will carry on.
Great. So, yeah, so the concept behind the band, so is that, well, it's like a large ensemble improvising, but with direction.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So okay, so if you had to explain it to...
Yeah, okay, this is the question that you always dread. The basic... The question that I went to the PhD with was, you know, how can I create compositions which also allow improvisers the same sorts on levels of freedom that they get in free improvisation and do that on a large scale? So that was, and then I went through several pieces and worked with a lot of people and tried different things out, did a lot of experimenting and like, oh, this doesn't work. This works a bit. And eventually you've kind of come to this thing, which I think works quite well, which is why then I formed Union Division to do. So we do compositions. We are playing compositions.
Okay, yeah.
But they're set up in a way that people don't really need. There's no obligation for the players. The players don't need to refer to anything on the page.
Okay.
So the default position is we improvise. That's right. What we do.
Okay.
We improvise, but if people want to do other things, there are ways to do that.
Oh, brilliant. Cool. So... Yeah, so we're talking a bit off mic. So you've got signals between each member of the band.
Yeah.
So, yeah, because I saw you guys play, was it last month, I think?
Yeah,
last
October,
month I came here.
Yeah, beginning of October.
Yeah, it was a great gig. But
thank you.
But I love seeing that, just the interaction, kind of seeing, or trying to figure out what each symbol meant.
Yeah, you should never try and do that, yeah.
I mean, I could ask you to show us some of the hand symbols now. But I don't know whether that'd be great kind of podcasting.
Like, yeah, might not make... I could explain some of them maybe. But,
yeah, okay.
But I should first say the reason for that, the hand signals, is another big part of the questions that I had was how to do this without having a leader.
Okay.
So I was seeing lots, and being part of as well, lots of large ensemble things where there tended to be a structure in place, whether that was a person in front directing or whether it was a score that had set out things in advance, like these people are going to play together at this time and then this, which is why I'm like super interested in what Kath's doing, because I think she's also not necessarily doing that kind of thing and trying to get away from that. So it was about how to get this big group together without anyone in charge. So everyone has the same power.
Cool.
So the hand signals are a way that someone on that side of the stage can communicate what they would like to do to someone on the other side of the stage or to the whole group.
All right, yeah. So I guess because one thing I was thinking with parallels, I guess, like John Zorn had a bunch of music like that.
Yeah.
But I guess the difference would be he was always conducting. Most often
he was, although there are times when other people were doing that. And I think the main one that people know about is Cobra. But he wrote like a ton of game pieces.
Right.
Like loads from the kind of mid-70s through to the mid-90s. So he had a long period of his career. He's writing these pieces. I don't know, there's at least like 20 of them or something. Cobra is one of them. And it's the most famous one. It gets played a lot. And there are some definite similarities there, but I kind of went back to first principles and then was like, how do we communicate? And kind of came to some similar ways of doing things, but they're quite different. There's always, like you say, there's always someone at the front, and it's usually Zorn,
right?
Who has the kind of final say on happens.
So just thinking about that whole process of like when you're kind of making music with Union Division. So, so the question is like how it feels like, I don't know, like do you feel, because I guess they are compositions, but how does it feel kind of someone else making the decisions for you? Is that...
It's taken me a while. It was something that 3.5 years ago when I started working towards this, really struggled with. It's like, okay, here's an open piece. And then I had people doing performances of them. I was like, oh no, that's not right. You know, how I wanted it to be. And it was a journey of, I guess, on one side, loosening your expectations, and trying to set up materials in a different way so that people could use them more effectively. So what I was finding was if I gave people like things that were difficult to interpret or things that went against their skill sets, then it obviously it doesn't work. But anyway, it was a lot of experimenting, and now I love it.
Cool.
Is the answer
to
your question.
That's great.
Now there was a point in the last gig where the band got on stage and started playing before I even realized the break was over.
Oh, really?
And they just started playing, and I didn't know what they were doing. And that was like one of the best moments of the gig for me. I was like, this thing works. You know,
brilliant.
Everyone has taken control of it, and it's not mine anymore.
Cool. That's great.
You know, which is great. That's exactly where I wanted it to go.
Great. And then, so what I think, what I kind of quite like, we're seeing the lineups especially, is like, it seems like a lot of people from different parts of the scene, or different scenes, or this like micro scene. So I guess, is it the same core band, kind of, or the same, well, it's like a pool of musicians.
Yeah, so the way
working with.
There's a pool, there's about 25 on the list at the minute. And essentially, I'll just email everyone and say, here's a date, who's free? And because it's quite big, it's now needs a little bit more controlling. But essentially, it was whoever's free, come and play. And that's the band.
Cool.
And it happens that some people are a bit more free than others.
So
it sort of seems like maybe there's a core, but there isn't really a core.
Okay, yeah.
It's kind of whoever, and it might be that we have three drummers one time or no drummers one time and two bass players, or you know, that could happen.
Cool. So so when picking the musicians that you're working with for this project, so like with the skill sets, like what sort of thing would you be looking for? Because what I noticed, there's some like real hardcore improviser folk, and then there's more people more on the whole jazz side. Just the combination I think is quite cool.
That was very, very deliberate. And it goes along, that's, you know, what obviously when you're writing for improvisers, like the first thing you decide as a first compositional decision you make is who is going to play. And that is probably the most important decision you make out of everything else you do. It took a long time getting those people together, and it was very much, you know, people that, A, that I loved what they did, but B, who would work together well in some way. Obviously instrumentation, trying to balance that, but also personalities and approaches to the way they play, and then the way that they might interact with the stuff that I'm giving them, and the way they might interact with each other. So there's all these things I'm trying to balance, and yeah, very much it was a case of, here are some people who are more rooted in the jazz side of things, who are going to bring this element to it, which I want to be there. I want to have some grooves maybe, and I want to have some of that lineage in there. But then there's a lot of free players in there who really haven't done a lot of jazz, or at least for a long time.
Yeah.
And they're really rooted in the free tradition, which is very strong. And just bringing that. And there's also some people who are kind of more contemporary classical players.
Right, yeah.
Who come along. And they bring something else again.
Totally,
and
it's
the coming together which gives it this sound, which I think is a really cool sound.
Definitely, yeah. But the other thing that was great is kind of like, they saw some faces like, oh, I don't recognise that person. And it's just like, cool, there's like more musicians in London.
Yeah.
Kind of more learning to do. No. So, but when you're kind of getting a new person involved, so how does it work, the rehearsal process? Do you kind of...
There isn't really.
Just kind of...
There was for a while.
In the deep end, kind of...
Yeah, I sort of have to have a... The last couple of times, I've just had a Skype conversation.
Oh, okay.
And talk to them about just how it, just the mechanics of it.
Right, yeah.
This
yeah.
is how it works. This is the whole ethos of the project. So that they understand, if someone is trying to direct them, they don't have to do it. You know, they can always improvise. That's the really important thing that people struggle with a bit, or have struggled with at least in this band. So it's getting that across. And then they come in and we'll tend to play for like an hour as a kind of sound check rehearsal thing. And then... Mm-hmm. And you don't want to over rehearse it either.
No, I guess, yeah. You don't want to kind of use up all the ideas before. Yeah.
And also like concretize, is that a word?
Like, yeah, yeah.
To make, you know, you don't want to get things into molds.
Totally, yeah. Because I guess it's like a living organism in a way.
Yeah.
It seems so, that music. Cool. Great.
Absolutely.
So before we finish, what else have you got coming up? Are you.
I guess the first thing, I'm kind of out of the country until January, basically, from the end of this week. But then hopefully I'll have a couple of gigs in Connecticut. I'm waiting to see about that. But
nice.
When I get back, then it's going to be... we're going to be releasing a new Let Spin record.
Oh, mega.
In the spring, probably. I think it's March. So we've got a few dates in February, a couple in Germany and Budapest, and one here upstairs at the Vortex.
Nice.
In Feb. Bring the record out, and then we... doing a bit of a UK tour in April. So that's kind of the exciting thing for the start of next year.
Great.
And then there'll be more Union Division dates. There's a few booked in for here as well. Now.
Oh, right. Cool. Do you have the dates to hand? Because you mentioned them now. Because I'm hoping to put this out in the next couple of weeks.
Okay. So
it might work as an advert, possibly.
March? Well, the Let's Spin gig here is February the 2nd. And the Union Division gig at the Vortex is March the 4th.
Cool. Yeah. Brilliant. All right. Yeah. So to get everyone to come down.
Yeah. Please do.
Yeah. Be check great. Out. Right. Here's our guest this week, Moss Fried. Big hand for Moss.
Thank you.
Thank you everyone for joining in and listening this week. Big shout to Moss Fried for being on the podcast, and hope to see you all soon. Bye.